Mr. Clarkson, reel 42.
Now, actually, she was used as a decoy ship for the Emden. That was just before I went to her. Because they... she was painted... She was wasn't painted grey. The Empress of Russia and Empress of Asia on that job, they were painted battleship grey. The Empress of Japan remained with yellow funnels and white hull. Yeah. And when the Emden was... on the go out there, she was, although she was armed, she was at sea as a decoy for the Emden. So if the Emden attempted to sink or capture, well then they could give a good account of themselves. And then the Embassy of Japan did recapture the Exmouth, a collier that the Emden had captured, and they brought the officers, they were Emden officers, they were prisoners aboard the Embassy of Japan.
And we were talking there, you say there was the relationship between the merchant seamen. Is there anything particular about it? Was it a different sort of environment? I mean, did you feel it to be slightly more relaxed than the proper navy, or less relaxed, or
they did resent the naval discipline a bit.
They did.
Yes. They did, yes. But they were men to be admired. I think they were, in those days, they were seamen. We had quite a lot of them. Were all ex-sailing ship men.
Yes.
When they used to talk about the Western Ocean, 90 days, and I used to sit down at night, and they were nearly all swatting for their second mate's ticket. And they nearly all got them, because eventually, when they left the ship, they were sent home. They came back out there as officers on merchant ships, and they came aboard to see us.
Were they from any particular part of the country, or were they just merchant seamen?
No, they were Welshmen, Liverpool people, and Irishmen.
Irish, yes, that's interesting. You know which part of Ireland, by any chance?
I should think round Limerick way.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I was telling you the other day about Hanrags we used to call him. He was Captain Boyle's special ledgeman. Mm-hmm. Now, actually, he was a real bad hat, a bad character, but a very likeable, gullible Irishman he was. And his father was a captain of a sailing ship. And Hanran, he'd served his time in a sailing ship. And when he'd sell anything. He sold all his kit for rum. But if we were in any place that there was a bit of doubt about the soundings, any coral reefs or anything around like that, if we were going in a harbour, and some of those places are very dodgy up the Red Sea coast, Captain Boyle used to say, "Where's my special ledgeman, Hanran?" And if Hanran wasn't drunk, they used to find him. And he could heave that lead, whatever speed you were going, he could heave it right past the bows and get an accurate sounding every time.
Did he call out the heights as he was going? Did he call out?
Oh, yes. Yeah, for the Mark 5, 7, whatever it was, deep 9. And he was the fella that used to sew them up. Whenever he'd do anything for a... If he could get he used to get a top for that. But they were wonderful. I liked these merchants. They were seamen. They weren't tucked up with other things such as gunnery and torpedo and all that. But yeah, as regards seamen, we also had Chinamen on there.
Mm-hmm.
The Embassy of Japan, you see, had chinks on there.
And when we just, at the beginning of this, when I was talking at the opening, you mentioned this Mevagissey fisherman,
yes,
talking about Merchant Seaman again and discipline. And you said that, was he in fact, he was a royal, an R&R man, he wasn't, yeah, a merchant seaman, and he told the admiral more or less,
yes, that he liked the day he left it.
Yeah. Did the admiral respond? Did any of the officer of the day, or the officer who was accompanying the admiral, did they have him on a charge? Did
no,
they have,
no. It seemed funny. That was a small ship's company, and we had some rough people there. Apart from, this is on the Suvot. Now, apart from the, the Navy, we had Mercantile Marine Reserve, and amongst that lot there was Johnny England, the famous fighting man from Canning Town, and Hughes, another fellow from Poplar there. They were real roughs. Now then, we also had Scotch people from the Hebrides, fishermen, R&R they were. And then we had the Mabagizzi, the barons. There was a couple of the barons there. There was this Jack of Arran and his cousin, and others from Cornwall, around that way. Now, this baron, he was a weightlifter. He used to be on the boards before the war, was a weightlifter. His wife was also a weightlifter, and he was a very strong man. He was as wide as he was tall. He wasn't very tall. And he used to run the lower deck, if you like. Everybody was frightened of him. He was a very strong man, and he was a wrestler and a weightlifter. I was a friend of his, because I had to be. For instance, when we were in the barracks in Colombo, refitting, we lived ashore in the barracks after we'd been up in the hills recuperating. Another fellow from Cornwall, he was the armourer, he came from Fowey, and his baron, they more or less took me under their wing. I was only about 17 then, I suppose. But we had to train. They were always in training with these two, and so I had to be with them. And when we were in the barracks, we used to go out at night time with a pair of shorts and running shoes, and used to run for 2 miles, and then hire a rickshaw, drive for 2 miles, then get out and put the rickshaw coolie in and run for another 2 miles. Club swinging, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We had to do that. That was a religious rite. And, say, he was really governed the lower deck there. No doubt about it. Everybody was frightened of him. And on one occasion, remember, we had a middleweight champion. Ikey Cousins came out. Leading stoker, he was from Chatham. And I was the leading hand of the mess, and he was the leading hand, and I said, you'll be cook of the mess in accordance with the rota. He said, I don't do any cook. He said, I'm a leading hand. I said, so am I. Well, I'll do it. I said, and we're in such short numbers that you'll do it. And so this led to a fight. And this middleweight champion, he was just about to doctor me up. But Baron came along and said, go on, Chippy, give it to him. He said, if you don't, I will. And so I got stuck into this champion. And I think he was frightened that if he won the fight, that Baron would crucify him. And so, of course, that was easy meat for me. But he was a vicious man. On one occasion, he was relieved late. He was on a gun lookout aft, and we were at sea, and it was rolling and pitching a bit. And a fellow named Perkins, a big, affable lad up for the war, went along and relieved him a little bit late. This was from the middle watch, 4 o'clock in the morning. And Baron came down to me, and I was still awake in my hammock, and he said,
What's the time, Chippy?
And I said, 4:20. Just what I thought, he said. Quarter of an hour late, he was relieving me. He'll regret this. And off he goes aft. Ship was blacked out and everything. And even up on the poop where this 4.7 gun was and where poor Polly Perkins was patrolling round there. And Polly tried to get out of the way, but he followed him around and round, and eventually he hit him. And his method always was to hit you once and put you out. And he did with Polly Perkins, put him out. But in doing so, Polly had dirty teeth, buried him in Baron's knuckles here. And poison set in, and he used to walk up and down. He had to go sick, and he used to walk up and down the mess deck with his arm on a string, saying, "You wait till I get this better, I'm going to kill you." But Polly was keeping out of the way and hoping he never would get better. But that was the type of man he was. And his father now was the Fishery Protection Officer of Cornwall. And later on, go on a few years, I remember we had our photograph taken at in Aden, the three of us. And Baron, he sat down, pushed us to one side, sat down like this. And he sent his wife one of these photographs. And she said, "Who was the good-looking boy?" That was me on the end. He was going to fill me in. Yeah. But I'll say, years afterwards, when I was in Winchester Prison, we had a shipwright for Mavagizzi. Came in, bigamist, nearly all shipwrights are bigamists and joiners, funny enough. And he was telling me about this Baron. Everybody in Mavagizzi was frightened of him. He was the Fishery Protection Officer then. And his son was a bit wild too. He killed himself going down that hill in a car. And I thought, I would like to see Baron again. Now, this is going back about 15 years ago, I suppose. And we went down the West Country camping. And I went to Mavagizzi. And I went in the pub there and asked if anybody knew the Barons. Oh, yes. Jack O'Baron, he died with a heart attack 3 months before. And they asked me if I would like to come and see his wife, but I thought, no, I wouldn't do that. But I was the only one that knew he had heart trouble. And every night on this ship, we had a ring on the upper deck. And as you went up to have your bath and change, so you went in there and had three rounds. You didn't know who you were coming up against. You'd fight anybody. And, of course, it was all good humour, except for Baron. And he came down one day and he said, "Come on, Chippy." He said, "Nobody will have a mum with me." He said, "They're all gutless up there." And I thought, oh, dear, I'm going to get bashed here, because that was all he used to try to do. See how long he could put you out for. And so we went up in the on the upper deck and we got in this ring, and he hit me pretty hard, he did, and I went right from one side of the ring to the other, and I still remain on my feet, and I did lose my temper a little bit, and I thought, "You rotten so-and-so," and I caught him a beauty right under the heart. I knew that he had a weak heart, and he dropped on his knees. And I thought, "Oh dear, I've done it now." And then I saw him coming to, and his eyes glittered. And I thought, "Clarkson, you had it this time." And even there was a couple of them, real fighting men, they were there. The chaplain, he was refereeing the fight. And he said, "Here, don't you think you better stop this?" He said, "Someone's going to get killed here." It would have been me, of course. And he said, "Oh no, they were quite good sportsmen," he said. "Quite good sportsmen," he said. "Well, carry on." We carried on. Now, I spent the remainder of that three rounds hopping out of his way. And when we finished, he said, "Oh, hope I didn't hurt you, Chippy." "No," I said, "that's all right." But I thought, oh. Well, that was what he died of eventually, of a heart. And he'd done that through overtraining.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can I just nip across from there and just keep going on a little bit? When we were talking about the Red Sea there and about how men could get home, you say that as a young boy, you were quite happy to go out for four years. This was nothing, no problem to you. But for married men, it was a different matter altogether. That there was one way they could get home was having beriberi.
Beriberi, yes.
Now, did it ever actually happen that anyone was sent home? It was.
That was the most serious thing. Now, the beriberi, as I was always led to believe, was sleeping sickness.
Yes.
But this wasn't. This type of beriberi, you swelled. Mm-hmm. You started to swell. And your limbs, your stomach, your face, everything started to swell. And the only way that you could stop it was to get out of that climb, get the other side of Suez. And so they, in an emergency case like that, they would call another ship and they get him out of it straight away. We sent home three like that.
You did. But that was one way. There was no other way. I mean, could men manufacture something?
Oh, no. Oh, you could, no.